All right. Hello, friends. This is Regina, and I am back on my purple sofa making another recording for the mini-series, Awakening at Home. And as you all know, what I'm doing is teaching skills that help us to awaken when practiced. They don't help us when they're not practiced. The first skill I have stated is really the most important, which is why it is listed as number one. And that, of course, is the spiritual aspiration. The spiritual aspiration is really the guiding thought or the guiding realization for us now. As you all know, my current spiritual aspiration is forget everything, be the spontaneous moment and nothing else. And the more time I spend with this aspiration, the deeper realization I get as to why this was given to me as my aspiration now. I don't think I realized until I began to experience this aspiration how much I carried in my head all of the time. Emptying my head and being just this moment without any other thought is a completely different experience than the experience I was having prior to this spiritual aspiration. I mentioned to you that a previous spiritual aspiration for me was simply to heal. And that aspiration changed the entire world for me. Because nothing bad could happen. Prior to the spiritual aspiration to heal, there were things in my life, circumstances in my life that were good or bad, desired or undesired. Something to try to keep or something to try to push away. But once the spiritual aspiration to heal came, it changed everything, because then everything had that purpose. No matter what it was, no matter what happened, no matter what came into my life, it had one purpose: to help me heal. And that way you could say everything was good. So that spiritual aspiration was a guiding light in every moment of my life, while that was my current spiritual aspiration. This spiritual aspiration to forget everything, be the spontaneous moment and nothing else, it's a guiding light for every moment of my life. And so whatever your spiritual aspiration is, it is also that guiding light for every moment of your life. And if it doesn't seem to have the power to be a guiding light for every moment of your life, you might want to ask again. Maybe that isn't quite your spiritual aspiration. Maybe that's a sweet ideal. Maybe that's something that makes you feel better. But if it can't be a guiding light, a discerning factor for every moment of your life, it might not be your spiritual aspiration. So just ask again. I've had a few people ask me about how to find that spiritual aspiration. It seems some people feel like they're struggling with that. And of course, I said it's very, very important, and it is. I'm not going to take that back. But to struggle looking for your spiritual aspiration means that it's the ego looking. And the ego is not going to find it. So ask, just simply ask for your spiritual aspiration to be revealed to you. And then wait for the gift. And then wait for the gift. The second skill that I taught is the skill of contemplation. In fact, I did some contemplation this morning. This morning I was contemplating the seven steps to awakening. And I contemplated quote 833 from step four. This is 833. The wise talk here of four qualities, possessed of which one will succeed, but without which one will fail. First is listed discrimination between unchanging and changing realities. And after that, dispassion for the enjoyment of the fruits of action both here and hereafter. And then the group of six qualities, including peace and, of course, the desire for liberation. Now, the very first time my mind read that quote, it went like, I don't know, it wanted to push the quote away. There was something about lists of qualities. The previous quote, 832, was also a list of, quote, nectar-like qualities, which were deeply contemplated. But then when the next quote became another list of qualities, the mind was like, ah, geez, I don't want to do this. I'm looking to see how I got from, oh, geez, I don't want to do this, to contemplation. And the only answer I can give you is maybe it was the spiritual aspiration. Forget everything. Be the spontaneous moment and nothing else. And it was that knowing that the spontaneous moment was bringing me to contemplation. I mean, this was the pull of the moment. And so I forgot about the mind not wanting to contemplate another list, dropped into the heart with the help of the spiritual aspiration, and read the quote again. I may have read it 2 to 3 times. And then, as I typically do when I begin to contemplate, I grabbed my pen and I just began. I mean, there's nothing else to say. I just began. The first thing I felt to do this morning was just kind of summarize the quote itself. So the first thing I wrote was, four qualities with which one will succeed in self-realization. Discrimination, dispassion, peace, desire for liberation. So just kind of a brief summary of the quote. And then I felt to go deeper into one of those qualities, discrimination. And I began to feel that discrimination, when held too softly, is a great benefit. And that seemed to be very important, that word softly, because again, the ego is very hard. The ego makes even spiritual practice, you know, kind of a rigid thing that you can do right or do wrong, do well enough or be a total failure. So it seemed to be important. This softly. Any spiritual practice with softness seems to be spiritual practice with the heart rather than with the determined ego. So discrimination held to softly is a great benefit. Discrimination being remaining aware of that which is changeless, while noticing that the changing passes on. Discrimination is remaining aware of that which is changeless, while noticing that the changing passes on, or you could say comes and goes, of course. Again, as I sat a little longer with that idea of discrimination, I wrote, in discrimination, nothing real can be threatened, is understood. I am that. Isn't that the changeless? Aren't I that which is constant, while everything I look upon comes and goes, passes on? As I sat and looked at discrimination longer, I wrote, in contemplative discrimination. And for me, contemplative discrimination kind of means looking at it with an open curiosity to see what I can learn from it. So looking at the observance of the changeless and the changing with an open curiosity. See what I can learn or what I can realize or what I can see, right? In contemplative discrimination, nothing real can be threatened and nothing unreal exists, penetrates beyond intellectual understanding. It is held in the breast as a peaceful realization beyond all words. So what I was seeing, what I was feeling that I put into words is as I really sat in discrimination, noticing the changeless, noticing what I am, and noticing that everything else comes and goes. I realize that only the constant is real, and that no matter what the temporary is, it's temporary. No matter what it is, it's temporary. And therefore, it doesn't have the reality, the foundation of reality in it. It's something you cannot hold on to. It's something that is not constant. No matter what it is, no matter what it is, it becomes forgotten at some point because it passes on and it isn't anymore. It doesn't have the foundation of reality, where what I am has the foundation of reality. And this understanding that I am that which is real, this not mental, but the experiential understanding that what I am is the real that cannot be threatened, and that everything else passes on and disappears and has nothing left of it at some point. This leads to the realization that could be called true security, although those words fall weak. Security falls weak. For what I am doesn't even need security. It's so beyond everything And so I wrote, it penetrates beyond intellectual understanding. It is held in the breast as a peaceful realization beyond all words. A peaceful realization beyond all words. Therefore, one has, or one is, peace. And this realization is so deeply realized, there is peace. And then I wrote, the desire for liberation is the catalyst that leads to consistent contemplative discrimination. Therefore, it is, of course, necessary. Which takes us back to number one, right? The spiritual aspiration. The contemplation this morning. Very beautiful contemplation, I think. And I'm not done with quote number 833, because what I haven't really contemplated yet is dispassion. So the next time the spontaneous moment leads me back to the seven steps to awakening for contemplation, probably this dispassion is going to get focused on, because it is not yet contemplated. It remains. So the quote is not done. But I will spend today with this. So that's kind of a live review of the second skill. The third skill, inquiry and noticing. And as you know, we practiced root cause inquiry, and I demonstrated that again last week in the review, so I think I probably won't demonstrate that today. But root cause inquiry is looking under the covers, I call it, to see why I am upset. So it always starts with an upset. And as I've pointed out, it's best to really define that upset. Don't just say, I am upset. You know, really look at how you feel. I am furious. Or I am completely embarrassed. I want to die. I'm completely embarrassed. Or whatever you feel. Begin there. And then, you know, ask why. Why? Why do I feel completely embarrassed? And then, of course, the story pops up. You know, I'm completely embarrassed because I dropped this loud thing in this quiet place and everyone looked at me. Right? And then accept that if your mind were perfectly healed, if you were completely enlightened, you could drop this loud thing in a quiet place and everybody could look and you would not be so embarrassed. You would be fine with that. You might giggle at yourself. And then look again. So why am I so deeply embarrassed? And go from there. And uncover that belief, that thought that you have about yourself that led to that embarrassment. And then once that is uncovered, we come to step four, or skill four, which I talked about last week, which I call letting go, relaxing. It can also be called resting. It could also be called just being with. Someone once asked me, do you have to go through root cause inquiry before you go to the relaxing and letting go step? And the answer to that is no. Remember, these steps are not in a particular order. They're in a reasonable order that will work sometimes, but they're not in an order other than, number one, spiritual aspiration always comes first. It's the motive for everything else. But if you drop something loud in a quiet place and everybody stares at you and you are deeply embarrassed, one possibility is that you just be with the deeply embarrassed. One possibility is that you just be with the deeply embarrassed. You know, don't do anything to try to escape from it, like running from the room or whatever else may occur to you. Just let it hang there without trying to blame whatever you were carrying for being wet and slippery, or blaming the person who gave it to you and asked you to carry it. You know, just let that deeply embarrassed be there. One thing that sometimes helps me look at these feelings, which, you know, we can all agree are not pleasant, is curiosity. You know, what does being deeply embarrassed feel like? Can I feel something in my face, in my chest, in my gut? What is the mind saying? What is it that the mind wants me to do to escape this? Can I just look at that? Just notice it all. Like I've never been deeply embarrassed before, and I really want to discover the flavor of deeply embarrassed. Maybe, you know, maybe with the curiosity of a novelist who is going to have to write about a character who's deeply embarrassed and really wants to be able to write every detail so well that people can imagine it perfectly. You know, study it with that attitude. Just let it be, and don't ask it to go away. I mean, it will eventually go away because it's a part of the changing. And when it goes away, let it go. Don't try to cling to it so that you can study it more. But while it's here, just look at it, right? And that can work too, without going through the root cause inquiry. That can also heal. And so then the question comes up, well, when do you have to use the root cause inquiry? And I think the best answer I can give to that is when something doesn't seem to go away. You know, like there was once a person who I felt had betrayed me and really many other people. I considered him like a great betrayer, a deceiver even, a deceiver. He was a deceiver. That's a good word to describe how I was feeling also. We were betrayed by him because he was a deceiver. That really captures it. And these thoughts would arrive almost like gunfire, like machine gun fire in my mind about how awful he was. And you and I would feel that. It wasn't really an anger. It was a hatred, I suppose. It was a hatred for his deception and his betrayal, right? A hatred. I would feel that and I would choose to relax and let go. And when I relaxed and let go, it went away for about 30 seconds. And then it came back. And I went through this for 9 months. At least that's how I remember it, is 9 months. Sometimes the memory is wrong. This was a situation where I needed to look under the covers. I needed to use root cause inquiry. I needed to inquire and look and see why I could not just relax, let go, and have this upset, this hatred, this feeling of, you know, being betrayed go. Why wouldn't it just go? And if you know the rest of the story, you know that I discovered that there was a false belief in betrayal that needed to be seen through. And then until that false belief in betrayal was seen through, as long as I still believed that betrayal was possible, he remained the betrayer. And in fact, As long as I believed that deception was impossible, he remained the deceiver. Only when I was able to see that I made up these beliefs and that they were not at all true, did that forgiveness come, where there's this genuine love for him as he is, just exactly as he is. And there's absolutely nothing in me that resists him or needs him to change. So again, if you can just be with something and let it pass and it's done, that's good. And in fact, one thing that happens as you practice root cause inquiry more and more is you'll get to where you do almost an automatic root cause inquiry. Like you will be upset and you don't have to sit down anymore. You're upset, you look, and boom, you see the root cause. It happens. You become a master of root cause inquiry. And so because you are looking right at the root very, very quickly, you just move directly into relaxing and letting go. Primarily on how to use these skills and when to use these skills, you'll need to learn to rely on your intuition. If you try to learn at the head level some kind of rule, if-then rule, for when you should do a certain thing, the mind is not the part of you that wants you to heal. Therefore, you will only be confused. The mind isn't really going to help you with this. It's the intuition that's going to help you with this. So just plan to rely on your intuition as to when you need to go to root cause inquiry and when going directly to relaxing and letting go is okay. Let that guide you. Don't worry. Remember, be soft in your spiritual practice, not hard. So those are the first four skills that we have looked at: spiritual aspiration, contemplation, inquiry and noticing, letting go and relaxing. And tonight, we're going to look at meditation and self-inquiry. I will tell you that I have four favorite books on meditation. Oh, no. I don't know where that four came from. Three favorite books on meditation. And I do recommend all three. I really do. I mean, I'm going to talk a little bit about meditation. It looks like approximately 31 minutes, maybe. But I recommend these books, and I recommend spending time with these books. I recommend reading these books somewhat contemplatively, although maybe a little faster. You don't want to spend a week on one sentence. You'll never get through the books. But Michael Langford, two of the books are his. And of course, he recommends something about reading, you know, each sentence or each paragraph slowly three times before moving on to the next. One of the books is Adyashanti's book, and Adyashanti has very, very short chapters in his book, so you could read an entire chapter. It's only, you know, 2 to 3 pages, and maybe read it like 3 days, or maybe read the entire book, you know, one chapter a day, but then read the entire book 3 times, something like that, you know, so that it's a slower reading to where you're taking it in deeper so that the mind can't just quickly forget it. The three books that I recommend are The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss. There's also a newer version of it called The Direct Means to Eternal Bliss. It doesn't really matter which one you get. The primary difference that I see between the two is that The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss is written one sentence at a time, and the sentences are numbered. And The Direct Means to Eternal Bliss is written in paragraph form, and there's no numbering. Some people prefer one, some people prefer the other. The book is by Michael Langford, but his name's not on it, so you won't find it by searching for the author. Just search for The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, or The Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, and you will find it. The book is genius, in my humble opinion, in that it does a really good idea of explaining ego tricks, tricks that are very important for us to see. And it also does an excellent job of teaching what is called awareness, watching, awareness, meditation. I don't feel that awareness, watching, awareness, meditation is new. In fact, I feel that although it's been called by many, many names, it is what Nisargadatta Maharaj taught. It is, as far as I can tell, what Krishna taught way back in the Bhagavad Gita, possibly up to 5,000 years ago. Many modern-day teachers, in their own way, teach it. Muji. Obviously, Aryashanti, since I'm going to recommend his book too. It's what Ramana Maharshi taught, but he called it self-inquiry. And I'll talk about how self-inquiry helps with awareness, watching, awareness, meditation. Because that's primarily how I get myself there, to that meditative skill. I have a rock that Michael Langford gave me. It's a heart-shaped rock. And Michael Langford, where he lives, there's this really long driveway. And of course, you know, when he has to take his trash to the road to be picked up on trash day, you know, he takes his trash bin down this really, really long road and he leaves it at the end and then walks back up this really long road to his house. And he told me that, you know, he did this, walked to the end of the driveway, left the trash, walked to the end of the driveway, left the trash, you know, walked back later to the end of the driveway to get the trash, you know, probably once a week for 17 years, he said, before he found this rock. And one day he looked down and there it was. He'd been walking past it for 17 years and hadn't seen it. And he said, what this represents is that most people live their entire lives without ever focusing attention on the true self. It's right there the whole time, just like this rock was at the end of his driveway the entire time. And he gave it to me as a remembrance to focus attention on the true self. Well, that's what awareness, watching, awareness, meditation does. Is it focuses attention on the true self. And you sit in a resting but alert way, being aware of the true self instead of being absorbed in the outside world. There are some other meditations in the book also, The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, that may also be helpful. But I do perceive awareness, watching awareness, to be the most powerful. The other Michael Langford book that I want to recommend is How to Live a Life That Knows Only Love. How to Live a Life That Knows Only Love also has about 8 chapters of quotes in it, which you could use for your contemplation practice. It has different kinds of quotes by different kinds of teachers. There's a chapter with quotes from Nisargadatta Maharaj, a chapter of Ramana Maharshi quotes, a chapter of W. Norman Cooper, and then Eva Bell Werber, Margaret Koble, Elise Morgan, Miru Ganar, and Vasistha. So each of these has a chapter, so there's lots of quotes here. This book also teaches the loving all method, which I'm going to talk about next week. Not tonight, but it's also in this book, How to Live a Life That Knows Only Love. And then the reason I'm talking about this book tonight is what this book also has is it teaches another type of meditation called the Loving Consciousness Method of Meditation. Now, the Loving Consciousness Method of Meditation is, in my opinion, not really a different type of meditation. It's another approach to awareness, watching awareness. It's a loving, devotional approach to awareness, watching awareness. And some of us find this loving, devotional approach a better approach for us. You could say we are more suited to the devotional approach. I have also on my website, reginadonacres.com, under audios and under meditation audios, if you scroll through the audios, you will find an audio called Introduction to the Loving Consciousness Method. It's a 30-minute meditation. You could listen to that one time. That will help introduce you to this Loving Consciousness Method meditation. You may know from that introduction whether that it fits for you or not. And if it does, you might want to go and order How to Live a Life That Knows Only Love. I adore this book. I adore this book. I really recommend it. In the time that I have here, there's not a lot of time to demonstrate this loving consciousness method. So please go and check out that 30-minute audio. Give it a try. You can also find it on the Awakening Together website. Underneath audios, meditations, devotional meditations. And again, scroll down until you find Introduction to the Loving Consciousness Method. The third book that I want to recommend is Adyashanti's book, True Meditation. Now, Adyashanti teaches a slightly different perspective of meditation, but some people are going to find it easier, and I think it's going to be just as effective. It's the meditation of what I would call just being. Just being and allowing everything else to be as it is. It's not getting caught up in your thoughts, for example. It's not getting caught up in your emotions. You do have to stand back from them in an observer role. If you listen to Ken Wapnick ever, Ken Wapnick talks about sitting in the balcony with Jesus, eating popcorn and watching the self. It's like that. You sit in meditation and no matter what comes and what goes, you remain the neutral observer watching. You are being the self. So in Michael Langford's meditations, the awareness, watching awareness, and the loving consciousness method, you are being aware of the self. And in the Adyashanti meditation, you are being the self. Either seems very effective to me. I would say whatever comes most naturally to you, whether it's awareness, watching awareness, the loving consciousness method, which is using devotion to keep attention on awareness, or the being the self by allowing everything to be as it is. Whichever meditation works best for you is the one that I recommend. What none of these meditations have, which I think is very, very important, none of these meditations involve imagination. You know, like you hear those meditations, imagine yourself in a surrounded by a golden light, right? Now imagine that you're floating. You're floating high in the sky and you look down beneath you and you see green pastures, you know, whatever. Those visualization meditations can have their benefit. But I think that the three that I am recommending to you today, awareness, watching awareness, loving consciousness, and Adyashanti's true meditation, I think they will take you further in self-realization. Now, I said that this fifth step, I said that it's meditation and self-inquiry. Self-inquiry is the tool that I use to put me into awareness, watching awareness, or loving consciousness meditation. And what I'm going to do now is demonstrate that for you, just briefly. So we're going to meditate just a little bit. So please make yourself comfortable. But I recommend a straight spine. If you can keep your spine straight and yet feel comfortable, it's easier to both relax and remain alert. And it's important to be both relaxed and alert during meditation. When you're in the comfortable position, close your eyes. And just to get us started, let's just take a few deep breaths. If you like to take deep breaths, or maybe one deep breath and then notice the rhythm that your breathing goes into, whatever feels best for you. I don't want anything to feel forced. But we want to start communicating to the body-mind that we're going to meditate. So something with the breathing that helps you to do that. I'd like you to start paying attention to whatever sounds you hear in your environment, no matter how subtle those sounds may be. I have Jamie snoring here at my feet. There's a ringing in my ears. I can hear the heat coming through the vents. So just whatever sounds are in your environment, just pay attention to them for a minute or so. Continually relax your awareness and you might become aware of even more sounds. Or you might become aware of feelings, maybe the way your face feels. or the way your body feels against your chair. Just continue to be kind of general in your awareness, just paying attention to whatever your awareness takes in, and just let that awareness relax, and it kind of grows bigger. You'll start to be aware of more and more. Just kind of relax and let that happen and notice what you're aware of. Again, noticing whatever you're aware of. Let your awareness naturally pick something that's kind of dominant in your experience right now. Again, it could be a noise, it could be a sensation in the body. I'm going with the ringing in my ears. And just pay attention for a moment to that dominant thing that awareness has picked. Relax into that, being aware of that. Without judging it in any way or thinking about it in any way, just watch it with an open curiosity. And now look within yourself. What is it that's aware of this thing? Look to see you. Place your attention on you. Although everything you've been aware of continues, the dominant thing continues, look to see what it is that's aware. Move your attention to that. And just as a moment ago you rested your attention with the dominant thing, rest your attention now on you, on that which is aware. It's an open curiosity. What can you see in you? What can you see of awareness? What is this thing that is aware? What am I? Look. Place attention as far back in the me-ness as you can. What is this thing that is aware? What am I? Rest in the background of your nature. Pay attention to what you are before thoughts. Before feelings. What is this that looks out at thought and looks out at feelings? What is this basic you, this foundational you, on which everything else is built? If you become aware of anything, if your awareness drifts to anything, just ask again, what is aware of this? Or who is aware of this? And turn your attention there. When you're ready, open your eyes. That was a brief demonstration of how self-inquiry leads to awareness, watching awareness. And I'll tell you what happened for me, because I do practice the loving consciousness method of meditation, is that I went from self-inquiry to awareness watching awareness, and once I was settled in awareness watching awareness, I naturally fell into loving consciousness, which loving consciousness is loving that awareness. It's a devotional awareness watching awareness. So that happened for me naturally. And again, if you become familiar with the loving consciousness method, you might choose to use it if it just feels natural to you. If you feel like you have to force yourself to love, well, then maybe you just want to use awareness, watching awareness. Or if you really have trouble just even really noticing that awareness and noticing how to keep your attention on that awareness, maybe try Ajahn Shanti's true meditation technique. I recommend meditation. It's on my list. I'm not going to recommend how much meditation. I'm going to ask you to follow your intuition on that. But remember what Michael Langford said about how he walked to the end of his driveway to take the trash to the end of the driveway many, many times in 17 years and never noticed this heart-shaped rock. And that's how most people live their lives. They go their entire lifetime and they never notice the true self. And remember that we are here for self-realization, for awakening to our true self. Doesn't it make sense that spending some time every day paying attention to this true self is helpful to realizing it, helpful to awakening to it? Doesn't it make sense that if the true self is our goal, if that's what we say is our goal, that we spend some time every day focusing on only it, put everything else aside and just be with the true self? To me, it makes perfect sense, which is why I recommend meditation. And again, I'm recommending self-inquiry because that is the tool that is helpful to me to get me into awareness, watching awareness, and loving consciousness. If self-inquiry is not helpful to you, it's not important. The self-inquiry is the tool. The meditation is the practice. So next week, I will be here live. And we'll probably do a review, especially of meditation and self-inquiry. And then we will get into prayer and devotion. And possibly into surrender and acceptance. We'll see how much gets done in an hour. So thank you for hanging out with me. If you do want to support this mini-series, you can, as always, make a donation on the Awakening Together website under the Donate menu. Under the Donate menu, support this mini-series. If you are donating to this mini-series while it's happening, the donations will go to the Retreat Center campaign. Thank you very much for your donations. Bye-bye.